a little stalk.
Basol, take one.
It's a big old fat motherfucker called
Blizzy Buzzard Buttocks.
Big Rigger Inspection Spatial.
Under my feet.
But look, the biggest heavy band of all time.
I wouldn't ask you to do a drum roll if your arm fell off.
There was an incident with the pyrotechnics.
And Kirk!
Squillions of dollars and squillions of people.
How the fuck are you, Lars?
Piddly wants and wills and needs.
Lars Ulrich, drums and bongs.
What the fuck does that mean anyway?
I hate that fucking camera, man.
Well, since we started...
I'm talking about like a fucking live gig. You see this for, right?
What really gets my dick hard...
Mommy...
Hey, this is Chris Jericho Fozzie, and you're listening to An Podcast for All. Order me a cheese pizza, damn it!
Welcome back to the podcast for all. I'm Shane Obershaw.
And I'm Jeff Winslow.
Season 12, episode 7. I apologize, Jeff. I have to start this off apologizing to you.
Uh-oh.
I am in the loudest, noisiest, most obnoxious hotel room. Not that I've ever been in, but when we hit record and I'm on the road, not the most ideal conditions, but I'm going to do my best, man.
It's all right, because I got my headphones on and you sound A-okay, sir. So I think the listeners... They'll be fine. Maybe a couple hate mail messages, but...
A couple hate train inboxes. You can hear the vacuum. You can hear the maids. The rooms are so thin, you can hear the person next to me tapping their toothbrush on the sink this morning.
Correction. You can. We cannot.
Oh, my God. I didn't get much sleep. It's early Monday morning as we record this. Mr. Lee Jeffries from overseas, the now famous 72 Seasons photographer, is going to join us in a little bit. I don't feel rested. I feel rushed. There's noise. It never fails. When there's a special guest, there's always a curveball coming our way.
That's all right. That's usually, you know what that means? That means that the episode is going to be probably one of the best episodes then. Usually when the most headaches happen is when the biggest reward.
Just like playing a live show. So many curveballs, so many terrible load-ins, so many terrible sound crews, and it turns out to be one of the most memorable shows we ever played.
This is true.
This crown... of barbed wire. I'm getting hooked on that song lately.
What did it for me is the main riff when it kicks in. That down, 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 down. That riff is just disgusting sounding. It's dirty and heavy and sludgy. And surprisingly, it seems like the sludgier tunes I'm digging a lot more than I thought. I can't even think right now off the top
too
of my head.
Too Far Gone?
No, I don't dislike that song, but that song it's a little bit further down on my list.
Really? Wow. That's what I refer to as the No Remorse riff.
I can't even think of the name of the song right now. Number 5, You Must Burn.
You Must Burn! Exclamation point.
For me, that's the best song on the record. That's my favorite one.
Really?
I keep going back. The chorus of that song is... it's like borderline catchy. Like I absolutely
love how
the,
he sings it.
I like the chord progression for it. It's a very, you know, kind of almost 80s like arena rock riff. If you listen to the riff over the chorus, it's like, ooh, that's kind of tasty. That and your favorite, Shadows Follow, those are my go-to songs on the record. My two favorites.
That's Shadows, I'm still trying to warm up with. I'm still trying to find a relationship with Shadows Follow, and It hasn't happened yet, but we're working on it. It's
that
it's
one
slow,
almost
slow process.
That one almost is my number one.
Shadows?
Yeah.
Wow.
Shadows and Burn. It's like a tie between those two.
I'm surprised that I can't get away from Crown of Barbed Wire. because initially in the theater, I was like, that's not doing it for me. But the vocal delivery of that war, it's something new to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he's going to say a barbed wire, you think he's going to say a barbed wire.
Yeah.
But how he says that word wire.
Like, it's almost like this like bluesy twang almost to it.
It's something totally new, and I've been hooked on his delivery with some of these songs.
I have too.
Room of Mirrors, a lot of people, they think that's a filler song. I think Room of Mirrors is outstanding. Obviously, Too Far Gone. It's the ones that I didn't think that I saw the movie night that were going to kind of connect with me.
Mm-hmm.
I've kind of been leaning towards.
That's good, man. Yeah, I enjoy the record for me. You know, and we'll do a full, you know, breakdown of it. But for me, it'd be almost perfect.
Whoa, we can't do that. It's still marinating. I got to sleep on this for a month or so.
Well, that's what I said. At some point, we'll do it. And then we'll reevaluate our favorite albums top to bottom because we obviously have to add a new one in there. But we need some time for it to marinate. But yeah, it's like it's pretty damn close to like that almost, I don't want to say perfect, but perfect record for me to listen to. There's only two songs that I don't want to say I dislike, but that I'm, if they were not on the record, I think it would be damn near perfect. Which is,
I gotta ask you, what are they?
Chasing Light and Room of Mirrors.
The reviews I'm reading, the friends I'm talking to, the people we're in a group text with, I'm like, you guys do not see what I hear in Room of Mirrors. It's
Room of Mirrors. How
so
I feel
going on in that song, man.
I feel about that song how you feel about Judas Kiss, where I feel like it's just an accumulation of a bunch of shit that they just kind of piece together. I don't think some of like the faster, punkier thrash beats and then the straightforward, you know, Phil Rudd beats. It's just the transitions between some of them. I'm not a huge fan of it. Just sounds like it was kind of pieced together. I don't dislike the song, so let that be known. Like,
I'm talking about the riffs, the melodies, the harmonies towards the end, that's what's catchy for me, man.
There's some good riffs, dude. Shadows Follow, that's all riffs. That's one of the best riffs on the record.
That's a riff tape put together from cutting room material.
Sometimes the cutting floor is the
and there's
way
to too many cymbal chokes. Back to the verse.
Well, that's the whole.
Here's the chorus. Here's another choke, and here's another choke. Like it's Master of Puppets, track two. But
it's
dude,
the whole record is cymbal chokes and just snare fills.
80 or 90 chokes in one song, man. That's too many times.
80 or 90 times.
Something. Saying, know what I'm saying? Too many times. 80 or 90 times. That's too many times. Once or twice is cool, but 80 or 90 times, man.
No, but yeah, overall. Great record. There's more songs on this record that I would keep on the record than previous, like as far as Hardwired is concerned.
Okay.
Hardwired, you know, there was, I mean, we could easily narrow that record down. We did to, you know, 8 songs and it would be a great record. And, you know, with this one, I feel like out of the 12, if it was a 10 song record minus the 2 songs I said, it would be almost perfect. I almost wanted to put Screaming Suicide in there, but to a lot of people's surprise, I gave it a very low review. It's actually started to grow on me. That song, after the record came out and hearing the record start to finish and how it goes, it's actually started to grow on me a little bit. So, Screaming Suicide can stay. The number rating, I don't know exactly what I give it off the top of my head, but it's definitely increased from a 3.5 or 4 or whatever I originally gave it.
Before we get to our special guest here tonight with Mr. Lee Jeffries, photographer of 72 Seasons, he has told me in advance Inamorata is his go-to, and it seems like that's a pretty common theme with the rest of the world. A long song, but a lot of people connecting with it.
Yeah, it's a good song. It's a very, very good song. I would still take the hi-hat out of the interlude, especially with headphones on. You can't hear the little bass line there.
I agree.
So like when you're listening to headphones, unless it's cranked, it goes into the interlude and all you hear is shh until eventually James starts singing. So it sounds like it's like 20 or 30 seconds of just nothing but hi-hat. Because obviously you can hear the bass on the record, but again, through headphones, unless it's cranked up, you don't hear it. It's not as, you know, it's not as out there as it is, you know, in the car or through some speakers or something like that.
That's why you like Injustice for All. The hi-hat was higher than the vocal.
If they took that out of the interlude, the whole hi-hat part, I think it would be a perfect song, but that's really my only complaint, and it's a pretty small one because I listen to that song a lot. That's probably next to Burn and Shadows. Inamorata would probably be the next one that I'd put as far as favorite songs.
My only complaint with that last song, it's 11 minutes, and it always seems to come on when I'm like 4 minutes from home in the car, and then I'm like, I got to spend the next 6 minutes in the garage because, you know, I'm still rocking these tunes in the car test. I can't turn the car off yet.
That's all right, though, because the first 4 minutes are really the best part of the song, in my opinion.
Okay.
A lot of people probably say, like, the interlude on, but I think it's the first half of the song that I find myself enjoying a lot.
Gotcha.
I enjoy the whole song, but, yeah, it's a little long, a little bit long.
Strong opinions across the globe for a record we've been waiting for a very long time, but
I really want to read Pizzle's review of the record live on the air, but I'm not going to do that to him. I'll tell you what he said off the air, but let's just say he's not a huge fan.
We don't need Pizzle's review because we have a special guest. 99% of the world loves the new record, and I'd say 100% of what I've read about the album packaging, artwork, and especially photography is, let's just say, next level.
Yeah, the photography's gotten better reviews than the album itself. I feel like all the fans have given the album a pretty good shake, but I feel like a lot of the, you know, the pages, the news outlets, it's hit and miss. Some of them it seems really good, and then some of them they're like, eh, we give it a 5 out of 10, you know what I mean? So it's good to see that the community, the fans are, for the most part, we're all pretty much on the same page. We're like, yes, across the board, this is a great record.
What were your thoughts when you first saw the four portraits of the guys in black and white?
I thought they were very... It took me a second. My initial thought was, you're gonna show that side of yourself, you know what I mean? Like, because to me, almost to a certain extent, it's like, I think it's just because we're so used to seeing people in their position looking perfect, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So at first, I feel like I was a little taken back by it, but the more, you know, I kind of looked at it and realized, like, They want it to feel real. They don't want this picture perfect Hollywood-esque look. They want, hey, this is where we are right now in our lives, and we want to capture some kind of emotion, and we want to share that with our fans. And I think it definitely comes through when you listen to the record, and then, you know, it is a package deal. You know, you've got the photos, and then you've got the record, and you put it together, and it all makes sense.
That's what stood out the most for me. When I saw the pictures initially, I was like, whoa, this is like something we've never seen before.
100%.
Which leads me to believe that this album is not going to be magnetic. It's not going to be the 80s. It's not going to be Hardwired. It's going to be something that looks really personal. We're willing to open up. We're willing to look really rough and weathered. And
even
honestly, we don't care what you think because this is who we are.
Right. I think it's interesting that they go for such a real look as far as the photos go, and then you listen to the record and it's so overly produced. But, you know.
Oh, you mean Tom's 1 and 2?
You mean the whole entire record? I mean, it literally, the whole record, I mean, it sounds great. But it sounds like there's about $1 million worth of compressors, EQs, auto-tune, you know, trigger drums. I mean, everything
we're
on this record.
We're going to talk about that. Everything we're going to talk about that is, after we've had this in our hands for a month.
You know, I feel like these photos go with the sound that Death Magnetic had, if we're going to put them together. That sounded natural.
Sure.
That sounded, you know,
sure,
real, if you will. But that's okay. That's okay, because, again, it's not necessarily about the mix on the album. It's the lyrics behind it. It's the meaning behind it. It's these photos. It's everything. And like I said, it's a package deal. You put it all together, and you've got something really special that, if it is their last record, I'm okay with that. Because this is for me, as a Metallica fan, this is a good way to go out if, again, big if this is the last hoorah.
Well said. With that said, you ready to get to it?
Let's do it.
Can't thank him enough for joining us. From the UK, 72 seasons photographer, master photographer. Can you say master of 72 seasons? Is that appropriate?
I think so, yeah.
The man who's bringing us images for, let's say, many years to come, 72 seasons. Thanks again for joining us. Please welcome Mr. Lee Jeffries. Well, Lee, thanks so much for coming on and Podcast for All. It's basically been 72 hours since the release of 72 seasons. What do you think so far?
The reaction to it has been amazing. I've spent on Instagram, I spent, you know, 2 or 3 hours each day just going through all the fans' posts on Instagram, just leaving, you know, as many messages as I can just to
sure.
kind of show that, you know, I'm here, I'm supporting, I'm just loving the whole experience. In terms of the music, I've been listening to it in the car when I've been driving around Orlando, and I think Inamortera is that's my favorite so far. I can relate to that so much personally.
Yeah, I've heard that. Been pronounced about 11 different ways now.
Inamorata.
The last track, 11 minutes, the longest Metallica song we've heard in 42 years.
It's just, I kind of really relate to that song on a personal level, I guess. Misery, she needs me, but I need her more.
Right.
It's almost like, you know, the lyrics and James is talking about my own sense of loneliness. It kind of, it's been with me all my life, and it's something that walks with me every single day. And it paradoxically, it becomes a kind of friend that you come to rely on, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. Jeff and I were mentioning the other night after we went to the movie theater show of how personal of an album this seems from James.
Yes.
It's James's record. I almost feel like it's the closest thing that we could get to a James Hetfield solo record, more than even a Metallica record. Maybe he'd mix a little bit of country or something in there, but I feel like with this record, lyrically, and then, of course, it's just a, you know, 77 minutes of basically riffs. It feels like very much a personal record to James, more so maybe than any record they've ever done.
As an artist myself, I can certainly relate to the feelings, that the personal feelings that James is putting into the songs and the lyrics, and it just, I think we all can relate in some way. I mean, I think that's the great thing about art. We relate in a human way, and we can adapt, you know, the song and the lyrics to our own situation.
Lee, tell us a little bit about how you got started. We know some of your backstory. It's amazing when Metallica touches anything and anyone's involved, we Google you, we Wikipedia you, we Instagram you, we research everything we can about someone associated with Metallica before Metallica called Lee Jeffries. Tell us what Lee was doing at that time.
Well, I'm pretty well known globally for my portraits of homeless people. So it all started around 20 years ago. And I was just out in London one day to run the marathon. And the day before the race, I decided I'd have a go at street photography, and I went out on the street with an old Canon 5D, 200mm lens, and I came across a young homeless girl sat in a shop doorway surrounded by Chinese food cartons, and, you know, I remember her sleeping bag was blue and red. It was really vivid. And I thought this might be an interesting photograph. So I started to shoot frames of her from across the street. She saw me and she kicked off big time. Didn't like at all what I was doing, which is perfectly understandable now, looking back. And everybody who was in London passing by was looking at me, and it was such an embarrassing situation. I had two choices: go over and talk to her, or just get out of the area and just kind of run away. I chose the first option, went to talk to her, and it was the first time in my life I'd really kind of accepted or basically heard someone else's story, someone else's pain, someone someone in a less fortunate position than me. For 30 years of my life, it was all about me and my career, and I was an accountant, and it was just really all about me. So that was, I think, that was the change, the turning point for me as a man, as a human being, and artistically. I didn't want to steal shots of homeless people anymore. I wanted to create relationships. And from that point forward, it's never been about a photograph. It's always been about the relationship, going out onto the street, trying to help where I can. And that situation's really ignited a compassion that I never really thought I had.
What year was this, Lee?
This was around 2005,
2006. Okay. An absolutely life-changing event that day.
It seemed to be. I mean, there are other things that have happened, but I think that was the main thing that changed my perspective on humanity, on why we're here, on the whole, just to be less selfish, I guess.
Watched a couple of videos of you with the Mission Gospel in Seattle video.
Yeah.
And I could tell the relationships and the connection with people that never thought that other people outside their world would connect with them was...
Well, I mean, I'll tell you where
the emotions that came from that were just unbelievable.
I'll tell you where the connections come from. People often ask me, Lee, how do you actually approach a homeless person? How do you create that relationship? And it all stems, I mean, and why do you do what you do? I mean, it all stems from it's a long story, really. I was in a relationship with somebody. It was a long distance relationship. And the times I wasn't with the person led to long periods of loneliness and a desperation almost to be back with her. And it was in those periods of loneliness that I would go out onto the street and look into strangers' eyes. I don't know whether you've actually walked on the street and actually made a connection with a stranger, but I was looking for that person, the person that I loved, in a stranger's eyes. And somehow I was connecting with people who had that same sense of loneliness. So I was feeling lonely. I would look into a stranger's eyes, and I could sense their loneliness. And that is and always has been the gateway to beginning a relationship. I would sense this feeling from the person, and I would approach them and just start to talk to them and be with them. And we'd create relationships. I was that open to a relationship, in effect, that I was almost falling in love with everybody I've met. These homeless people are becoming part of my family. And the more I did it, the more I didn't feel so lonely anymore. So it was kind of self-perpetuating. Just the relationship, the process of creating a relationship, and the photographs that I take are, I guess, the final goodbye. I have to carry on with my life. I can't stay with these homeless people. It's an act of saying goodbye, an act of mourning that relationship that I've created. And again, even with the Metallica shots, they're exactly the same. I mean, I have such a personal connection with those images in the same way.
So is it safe to say you'd take a picture at the end after having a true relationship and conversation and meeting with these people you'd meet along the way? The camera would come out last?
The camera always comes out last, and it's always about the relationship and, alleviating my own sense of loneliness, being with someone, acknowledging somebody else, listening to the story, and then helping them wherever I can. Obviously, I'm not oblivious to their situation, which is why I do work a lot with charities. I mean, I work with charities all over the world, and particularly this Seattle's Union Gospel Mission. I've worked extensively with them, and I think I'm going to be working with them again this summer. So yeah, the thing we did in Seattle was, it was amazing. It was a project where we used some of my images and we projected them onto the sides of the big skyscrapers and on sides of buildings in Seattle's Central Business District. And it was really a mission-led project to raise awareness of homelessness, and it did. I mean, we're on radio stations, we're on TV, and it got the bigger corporations to look over to the mission and what the mission were doing, and you know, they did raise quite a bit of funding from what we did there. It was an amazing experience.
That's amazing. Just the stories we've seen online, the videos we've watched. It's something I've never seen before, and the truth and honesty that comes out of your photography is just,
I mean, the mission.
It's hard for me when I'm looking at Lee to describe what I'm looking at, let alone you involved with these people.
The mission themselves, I mean, they do. I always say, I mean, my mantra's always been, I'll help the people individually when I'm with them, and, you know, I'll do what I can, and I always do. But I always say to people, if when they ask me, how can I help homeless people? And I say, help the people that help them, that are there for them every single day. The mission has, you know, drug programs, rehabilitation programs. They offer beds, a whole spectrum of services. They go out on search and rescue every single day, every morning, every night. And they're that proverbial open hand that basically says, if you're ready for help, we're here to give it. And you know, the mission does such good work, and like so many homeless charities across the world, they're the ones that need our support, and they're the ones that really can help on a macro level. Yes, we can buy a sandwich and a coffee and perhaps give a little money if we can. But on a macro level, it's these charities like the mission that are vital. They're lifesavers. They literally are lifesavers.
Over the course of your career, Lee, of all the hundreds of people you've met, taken their picture, how many do you still have a relationship with?
I don't really have a relationship with a lot of them. There was a. The fact that they're homeless is, you know, I hardly ever see them again. I mean, there's been a few instances where, I'll give you an example. I was shooting a guy called, I met and had a conversation with a guy called Andy in Miami back in, I think it was 2009. And then, you know, 5 or 6 years later, I find myself in New York. I see a guy just sat under a tree in Washington Square Park, and I walk over to him. As I'm walking over to him, my heart's just thumping. I'm just knowing this is Andy, and I shouted out to him, Andy, and he looked up and just said, Lee Jeffries. And it was just remarkable that he remembered my name. It gave me chills.
That's remarkable.
It gave me chills. So there are times that I do see these people again. Another example was a lady I met in Miami, Margot Stevens. Now, she was a hooker in Miami, and I'd met her in 2008, I think. And she was an ex porn star, famous porn star, been in all the movies of the day, I guess. But eventually found herself on the streets of Overtown in Miami. Now, I spent weeks with Margot, and she was such a sweetheart. I fell in love with her, totally fell in love with her. You know, it was just a pure, and you know, we both felt it, and you know, we talked about it, and you know, I would see her when I went back to Miami, and you know, I she she passed a few years ago, and she'd eventually got herself clean off the street, and she was just about to start a job for a needle exchange program in the city. And, you know, unfortunately, the years of substance abuse had just taken its toll, and she passed away in her sleep one night of a heart attack. So, yeah, I mean, the relationships are deep, and they mean an awful lot to me. And the images that I make are obviously my way of saying goodbye to these relationships. But the images are also deeply personal. They're my family members, and it's, you know, every single one of them, every single image that I release, there's a story to each one, and they all mean so much to me personally.
It shows the work's incredible. Did you ever think you'd go from the streets of Miami, the streets of Washington, to getting an email and possible phone call from Metallica?
No, I mean, the story of that is it's incredible. I mean, I was sat at home, and I got a phone call from New York, and I see this New York number, and I think, who's calling me from New York? I'm not answering that. I mean, it was a bit silly of me, but you know, I didn't answer. And then within 5 minutes, I'd had an email from Metallica headquarters. I read it, and at first I didn't believe it. I mean, my heart started to beat a little bit faster, and
was that from Q Prime?
Pardon?
Was it from Q Prime or their San Francisco headquarters?
It was from Mark Reiter.
Oh, okay.
So it was directly from Mark, and you know, I didn't know who Mark Reiter was. You know, I've never been a Metallica fan all my life, I'll admit to that, but I am a complete Metallica fan. I am complete Metallica fan now, as you can imagine. They converted me.
Just a little bit, sure.
I had that life-changing moment like I did back in, you know, 2008,
2000, you know. Yeah, right.
I'm now I'll never forget the Metallica shoot either, so... So Mark emailed me. I emailed him back, and he said, right, I'm going to call you in, you know, half an hour. So he called me, and then, you know, I suddenly realized that this is legitimate, and I was like blown away. He said, right, Lee, I'm going to put you in touch with our designers. The guy who's leading the design is David Turner. And yeah, I then was put in touch with David, and it was amazing.
What was the timeline like? What was the date when Mark reached out? We're just trying to get a timeline from start to finish on this project.
Yeah, it was very, very tight. So, when Mark put me in touch with David, I spoke with David on the phone extensively. It was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing over the next couple of days after the Mark call. So basically, I was speaking to David just to make sure that he knew exactly what I did, and there was no misconception that I wasn't going to I wasn't going to go to San Francisco and LA and change what I did. I do what I do. I create intimate portraits. If the guys wanted an intimate portrait in Lee Jeffries portrait, if you like, then they were going to have to do it the Lee Jeffries way. And that would mean, you know, going out on the street, walking on the street, and just, you know, none of the frills that, you know, they're perhaps used to. You know, it's just me, my camera, and a small reflector. And I was drilling David to make sure that the guys were totally on board with that, and they were not expecting some big, elaborate process. David, you know, instantly said, listen, Lee, you are the guy's number one choice. These guys want to expose something of themselves that's never been seen before. They want to, you know, the album is all about a certain vulnerability, and they want to show that. They're not afraid of showing that. Yes, they're rock stars. They they've been portrayed in so many different ways, but the time is right for them to show something a bit more personal. So I was kind of, well, yes, well, if they're saying then that's what they want, then that's what I can deliver, but only if they do it my way. Now, it meant that we'd have to take a walk in, you know, I'm particularly familiar with the Tenderloin district in San Francisco. So I wanted, when I was doing the shoots in San Francisco, because I know the way that light works in these big cities, and, you know, I've got years of experience of dealing with it, and I want to walk with James in, you know, in and around the Tenderloin and basically just take pictures there. It serves two purposes. I know the light, I know the area, I'm comfortable with it, and that's where I do my best work. And we're creating a relationship as we're walking. I'm becoming familiar with you, you're becoming familiar with me. And nobody's ever shot, in my opinion, an intimate, beautiful, emotional portrait without that level of intimacy with a person, you know, that personal connection. And I needed that time. I just didn't want to turn up to a studio, James be there, and then start shooting frames. It was just, it wouldn't work. It never works for me, that doing it that way. Have to create the relationship, have to become mates or friends, and just feel some love between us. And, you know, the guys were fully on board with what, you know, my requests, and, you know, they were happy to do it, and they did it, and you've seen the results.
The results are amazing. I think the Metallica people, we're blown away by it because we love the vulnerability. We love how raw it is. We love how it's not in a studio. There's no makeup, just an individual as close as I think a camera's ever been to them. And it's just four simple human beings on a street with you. And it's just honest is I think what we all love about it.
You don't ever get to see people in that position, that famous, that rich, doing something this real. That's what's cool.
I think that says a lot about the guys. I think that says a lot about the willingness to be open. You could be a famous rock star and you can have an ego. These guys don't have an ego whatsoever. They're just like me and you. They're just guys. And they love what they do. They're passionate about their art. I mean, they've been doing it for decades. That, you know, that shows just, you know, the passion they have for what they do. But it hasn't changed them. They're just normal guys who, you know, are personable, and they interacted with me in such a personal way. And, it, you know, it was a beautiful experience.
So it wasn't the five of you, Lee? You'd take one guy out one by one and just go down the streets in the areas that you knew well?
The way the shoot worked was I arrived in L.A. on a Monday. I shot Rob in LA on the Tuesday morning, then flew to San Francisco Tuesday afternoon, and then shot Lars on Wednesday morning, James Wednesday afternoon, and then Kirk Thursday morning before flying back to LA Thursday afternoon. And then I was back on a plane on Saturday because the images were needed by the designers the following week.
Oh, geez, that's fast.
So within two and a half weeks of the call from Mark Reiter, they had the images.
So it Mark Reiter calls 2.5 weeks, L.A., San Francisco. The next week they have the images, and I can sense this all took place in the year 2023.
Yeah. It happened, late 2022. So basically, it was, I think it was the end of October, beginning of November 2022.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So I've sat on the images quite a while. It's been like, please release them, please. I couldn't wait. It was I'm deeply connected with these images. They're so, in terms of what I've produced, they're so, I mean, it's some of my best work. I mean, they're really beautiful, and they mean an awful lot to me. And it's not just the band as well. I mean, I shot Torben, Lars's father, and the images I've got.
Yeah,
of him,
we saw that.
The images I've shot of him are priceless. They're just, and to get that photograph of Torben framed and made and sent over to Lars for him to keep forever was just, it was just an honor. It was just such an honor to be able to do that and surprise Lars with such a, you know, he's so close to his father. And I think it was, it's just something that I think he'll cherish now forever.
Lee, when you talk about holding on to these images, how do you get such high level of detail in your pictures? I don't think there's much retouching or anything called Photoshop in your line of work.
There is Photoshop. So basically, in terms of the gear, the technical stuff that I do, I use a Leica SL2, a 28mm lens. So I'm right up, I'm really close. And basically, the images are, I bring the images into, you know, Photoshop, Lightroom, and I basically dodge and burn. It's a technique that, you know, was always used in the old days on film, and digitally I use dodge and burn to create drama in a photograph. So I make shadows darker, I bring light into shadows, I make highlights brighter. I'm creating a cinematic experience within a single image. I mean, for example, the Lars image, I pulled that off the card at Lax on the way home. Within, you know, 5 minutes, I knew this was, like, sensational. I mean, I think the Lars image is probably my favourite of the four. Just for the eloquence and the way the light moves. I think it's just beautiful, but yeah, I pulled it off the card within 5 minutes. I knew it was a winner, and I worked on that on the flight home, and it was practically ready by the time I touched down. And I remember being so nervous to send it to Lars. I didn't want to send it to David Turner at first. I just wanted to get Lars' opinion, but I was so nervous to send it. I was thinking, shit, do I have to?
Sure.
Do I send it or do I not send it? But I just sent it with two words, and it just said, "Handsome bugger." And he replied and said, hey, just with emojis, shock emojis, and just said, "Wow, that is just unreal."
Handsome bugger, I love it. We'll name the episode "Handsome Bugger."
It's a perfect name.
It was like,
did you take any photos of Lars without his hat on?
I did, but I just kind of thought that the ones that with the hat on were just working better. They just the way, the expression, you know, when I do a shoot, I can shoot, you know, 300-400 frames, and I consider myself lucky to get one or two frames that really work. So I shoot a lot of frames, but I'm very particular about the emotion that I'm trying to pull. You shoot hundreds of frames, but if you don't capture that split second, it's a moment. The image just won't work. It doesn't matter how much dodge and burn you do. There has to be that emotion contained within the image to start with.
In totally with the four guys, how many total pictures did you take over the project?
How many total frames? I must have over 1,000 frames of the guys all sat in Lightroom of varying. You know, a lot of them are samey, so I shoot in bursts.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of them are like seconds apart, but they're, Yeah, there's I shot quite a few frames, and they're all there. And like I said, I go through each one, and I make sure that I, for me. So in terms of, you know, what the guys received, you know, David did warn them that you're not going to get, you know, a massive choice with Lee Jeffries. You're going to get like two or three images, and, you know, and Lee's going to make the recommendation on which one you should be, you should be considering. David said Lee will strongly recommend his choice. And I remember David reporting back and saying with James's image, he said James saw the image, and the first thing that James said to David was, is this Lee's recommendation? And David said, yes, this is Lee's recommendation. And James said, that's good enough for me.
Wow.
Now, where else, what other commission could you do where the guy that's being portrayed is so on board with what I was doing? I mean, I was, that level of trust, you just can't buy it. Sure. It was just
that's amazing.
Amazing of James, amazing of all four guys to actually trust me that much and trust the process. But then, you know, that trust has been rewarded, because I think the portraits, real, like you said at the beginning of the talk here, it's been rewarded because they fit so well with the album. There's a synergy with the portraits and the album.
Go ahead, Jeff.
I was just going to say, did all four of them end up picking your suggestion for their final frame?
Lars, yes. James, yes. Yeah, all of them. Yeah, definitely.
Very cool.
There was a discussion on between me and David on the Kirk image, but I was adamant that that was the one, and Kirk loved it. I think the discussion was between me and David more than Kirk himself. I think Kirk, yeah, Lee. I remember David saying that Kirk had said, yeah, Lee was speaking about something, and it had me pretty emotional, and he captured that. Fair play to him. So, yeah, I think what I was going for was really a personal shot, a sense of vulnerability, and a sense of authenticity. What I didn't want was four rock stars looking into the camera being rock stars. And
we've had plenty of that over the 42 years. We've seen that side of them.
That's what the guy said. They said that, you know, we've done all that. We've done that to death, and we want to do something different. And fair play to them, they did. And from the reaction, I mean, I'm getting people that are sending me emails saying that, you know, these portraits are the best portraits of Metallica in 40 years. And for someone to say that to me is just like mind blowing. It was such an honor to do it, but to be considered as one of the best portraits that Metallica have ever had is mind blowing.
That's what awesome. As soon as I saw they were for sale, Lee, that's when I ordered mine.
thank you, Shane. That's you'll get yours soon. And you know, in print. You know, you've seen them in the, I mean, I've got the CD cover now, so I'm just looking at that, and you've seen them, and they look great, even on a mass produced level, but on the fine art level, you get the uncropped version, you get the full Lee Jeffries version. Obviously, they had to be cropped to fit the sleeve, so the, I mean, we wanted the eyes to appear through the 72.
I've already got my frame options and my matting picked out, and all sorts of creativity to put this into one big frame project. Can't wait to get started.
Really? Brilliant.
Over the whole shoot, Lee, with these four guys, what surprised you the most? Was there any funny moments that happened in the streets? And who'd you connect with the most?
I was surprised just to how willing the guys were to do what I wanted them to do. That was when I first took on the project and accepted the project, I thought maybe I've taken projects before where I've got to the place and I've been directed, and it's just felt too. Art is a process. You have to. There's an experimentation element to art, and unless you experiment, I found in my experience that I don't produce. And if I'm directed, it's just not something that, as an artist, I don't consider myself a photographer. I consider myself an artist more than a photographer. I guess sure. It's just it was a blessing that it wasn't forced. It was organic. It was an organic process. So that surprised me the most. But then knowing the guys now as I do, I guess it didn't surprise me. Did I connect with anyone sure. the most? No, I connected with them all pretty much the same. Rob, you know, that first day, I didn't have any sleep. I was like totally jet lagged. I was looking at the ceiling all night, and the morning of the shoot, it was pouring down, and you know, we're obviously going outside and looking for light, and I was so worried. And I think I'd sent Rob a text just to say, you know, there's no light here. And he sent one back and said, Lee, I'm just coming over from Pacific Coast Highway and it's clear here. So if you're concerned about lighting, because we're meeting in Beverly Hills, if you're concerned about light there, jump in the car and we'll drive back to Venice or wherever, and we'll shoot over here. You know, this is Rob, bass player for Metallica, going out of his way to help me. That just shows the extent to which these guys were on board with what we were.
Hey Lee, jump in my car. I know where we're gonna go.
Yeah, it's just he was like fully, you know, I'm gonna make this work no matter what. I think he'd have flown me to Hawaii if necessary, to be honest. But yeah, it was. The guys were so on board, and I connected them with them all in such a personal way, and it was just a beautiful experience that I'm so grateful for the opportunity. I mean, I can't. Yeah, you know, I'm sat here just still pinching myself. It just seems unreal that these images are now immortalized on an album, on a brilliant album, in my opinion. And it's for my images, you know, for my daughter to grow up and, you know, when I'm long gone and just say, my dad did that. You know, it was a small part of that massive,
sure.
wonderful production. My dad did that. And
absolutely.
That just, it's just wonderful. And I'm just grateful to four guys that went out on a limb, took a chance and trusted me implicitly. And it's just wonderful.
Were there any moments in LA or San Francisco where somebody recognized them in the streets with you?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few guys, you know, when we were in San Francisco, a few guys recognized James, and I had a coffee with Lars in San Francisco, and there were guys in the coffee house. I actually bought Lars a coffee. He was grateful for. He said, "Are you buying me a coffee?" I said, "Yeah."
He didn't pick up the tab on your coffee, Lee? What's wrong with this Danish drummer?
Yeah, he made me pick up
the tab. He's recording an album. Times are tough.
It must be a European thing, right?
Yeah, so the guys in the coffee shop that were recognizing Lars, but it was, by and large, it just went by. We got it done, and we got it done smoothly, and there were no, I mean, I think there were concerns that, you know, going out into, you know, the Tenderloin area with, you know, James and Lars were and Kurt,
mm-hmm.
might be potential issues, but it gets a bad rap, that area. And I understand why, but it's, you know, I've been there. Some of the people there are just beautiful. I mean, it's a community of people, and the people that I've met have always been wonderful. So we did it, and it went smoothly, and everyone was happy.
Well, I can tell you, Lee, that Metallica fans around the globe are happy with it. It's something we've never seen before. It's, like I said before, true, honest, raw, vulnerable. When you take those images and mix it in with a really bright yellow rockin' record, you couldn't ask for anything better. It mixes and matches so well with everything we've seen over the years.
Oh, thank you. I'm grateful for your kindness, and I'm grateful that all the Metallica fans are enjoying the album now. I mean, we've all waited many years for this, and it's something that we should relish and cherish, this purple period of something new and something exciting. Is just, it's what we live for, isn't it?
Every day. Jeff, you've been pretty quiet today. Anything else to interject?
No, man, I've just been listening to the amazing journey from, it's just, to me, it's absolutely incredible. I love the fact that we got this realism, this, like Lee said, the vulnerability of these guys. It's just, it's truly something special. And if this is their last record, man, what a way to showcase them.
Something we don't think about. We do, but some of us don't want to admit it. But if these are the last album images, Lee, you've hit a total
grand
home run
slam
with this, sir.
Thank you, guys.
Out of the park.
Thank
grand slam.
100%.
Are you going to any of the concerts on the tour?
Yeah, we're going to see a handful of them. We're gonna be pretty busy the next couple years.
I think I'm off to Paris, so I think I'm going to go there.
I was going
to
ask you real quickly, how many copies of the portraits are you selling?
Well, the prints, I've got 50 of each, so basically 50, it's only limited to 50
okay.
copies.
Wow.
So it's not many at all, so.
I'm very fortunate to get one of those 50.
Yeah, I'm grateful to the band for letting me do that, so it's very kind of them, so.
I'll send you some pictures of my final frame job when we get it.
Brilliant. Look forward to that.
Thank you, Lee, for your time. We really appreciate it. It means a lot to us, and I know the listeners really appreciate hearing your journey, hearing your story. It's absolutely incredible. Well done.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You're my first interview, so you've got the scoop.
We got the exclusive. All right.
Okay.
I look forward to chatting in the future.
Top man, Shane. Top man, Jeff. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, cool. Have a good day.
Bob White.